Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, listeners. Welcome to the 8th episode of my talking blog. I'm broadcasting from Belmore, New York. It's Sunday, August 2, 2020. My name is Linda Gornanos. I'm the author of 40 Years of PMS. You can call me Notorious LGN, which is the nickname given to me by one book reviewer, and I kind of like it. Today's blog talk is about Chapter 8, entitled Desperately Seeking Disney. It builds on last week's blog, and hey, by the way, the blogs do build on one another, so catch up on any episodes that you missed. In Episode 7, I talked about how my serious family, when I was growing up, didn't go to amusement parks, and even visited a factory on one of our vacations. An interesting aspect of these weekly blogs for me is that I've had to look more deeply into the chapters of my own book, and I've had new insights. I believe in the concept of inspiration the way it's explained in the book entitled Inspiration by Wayne Dyer. In Episode 2, you can hear about the time I spent learning from Wayne. At the end of this week, the time had come when I usually print out what I've prepared for my blog, but I knew it wasn't complete. Problem was, I had nothing else to say. I was waiting for the missing insight to come to me. As I was doing my yoga and meditation morning practice, it popped into my mind. I went to my computer and I finished writing. In my book, I write about taking my kids to Disney as if it was all for them. But I see now it was as much for me to have that experience. So there was a multi-layered impetus behind this obsession to take the kids to Disney World. The trip was originally planned for our family of four, but my husband signed up to act in a play, and it turned out that opening night was during our vacation. At first, I was relieved that I would be taking the two by myself because I knew Nick and I would bicker over everything if we went together, which attractions, what to eat, when to rest. But, you know, that's how we were. My husband wasn't at all convinced that I could pull it off by myself, but I reminded him that I was quite the world traveler in my single days. In Episode 1, I talked about how I had traveled to the Galapagos Islands by myself. The key is right there, by myself, which is a far cry from with two children in tow. Nick had never been in favor of my plan to go to Disney. His biggest complaint was that he didn't want to spend a vacation waiting on endless lines in the heat. I came up with a plan to take the children out of school and go off season. We could visit the whole amusement park in 3 days without waiting on endless lines and with much less heat. I rationalized it would be educational and stimulating. I planned the trip with meticulous care, but the stars were not aligned from the get-go. The week before we were going to leave, there were some sniper shootings on the highways in Florida, and the perpetrator had not been caught yet. My children were 7 and 10 years old enough to understand the news. They asked whether it would be dangerous where we were going. I assured them it would be fine, but possibly not in the most convincing voice. We arrived in the airport, and the flight that was supposed to take off in the early evening kept getting delayed. We finally boarded close to midnight. Both kids were asleep, and I had to practically drag them onto the plane. When we arrived, I collected our luggage and rented a car. We didn't use a GPS back in the 1990s, so I set out in the dark to find our hotel. I had trouble seeing in the middle of the night. Most of the surrounding lights were off. Ian and Rhea began to cry in the back seat that they were lost, that we were lost and a sniper was going to get us. I finally found the hotel, and I managed to check in and get the sleeping kids inside and the luggage inside. And whew, okay. When the sun rose on the next day, our luck turned around. The weather was perfect. The hotel had a slide in the pool that went through a waterfall. The kids instantly forgot about the hassles of getting there. We had passes for 3 days at Disney World, and everything flowed perfectly. We visited every corner of the Magic Kingdom. Before I left the hotel each day, I checked that I had my park passes, my sunscreen, the money, the hotel keys, the car keys. Perfect. Towards the end of the 3 days, I began to check my convenient wallet itinerary that my travel agent had given me. I had to calculate exactly when to leave to return the rental car and board our plane on time. Now, I'm sure you know I'm building up to a story here. Here's a passage from my book. Since I have labeled this trip as the Disney Odyssey, one would expect there to be obstacles to overcome. Odysseus had to battle the Cyclops and resist the temptation of the siren singing that could lure him to his death. There can be no Odyssey without adversity. End of passage. So we arrived at the airport with plenty of time. We checked our bags curbside, and we were given our boarding passes. On our way to the gate, we stopped to pick up some snacks. When we arrived at the gate, something wasn't right. There were no passengers there. I walked over to the attendant, and she said we were there for the flight to New York. That's when she informed me the flight had already taken off. She had paged me, but I never heard it. I asked, how could this be? I showed her the wallet itinerary. She told me the time of the flight had been changed to 30 minutes earlier. I should have received a notice. Began to rack my brain. Were there any unread emails? Probably. In episode 6, which was about raising kids, I told you when things go wrong, you put on a big smile and act as if it was the plan. It's all about how you sell it. I said, hey, we get to stay another day in Florida. Ian and Rhea weren't buying it. What about school? What about our luggage? We have no clothes. Where will we eat? Where will we stay? We already turned in our car. Are we going to sleep in the airport? Wow. What was I going to do? Break down and cry? No, I was the adult. I had to figure it out. The attendant, surveying this scene, handed me vouchers for the hotel next door and rescheduled us for a flight the next day. I didn't relish the idea that I had to call Nick. I knew it wasn't going to be good. I explained as concisely as possible that the plane to New York just left and we weren't on it, but our bags were, and I needed him to go to the airport to get them. He had a few choice words about how I come up with a great plan and he gets caught holding the bag. I corrected him. Three bags. There were three bags for him to pick up from the airport. But he didn't appreciate the humor. We made our way out of the airport to the adjacent hotel. Everything about it was shady, including the hourly room rates posted at the entrance. After we checked in at the front desk, I noticed a gift store. We went in and I bought each child a bathing suit so they could take a dip in the pool and a large t-shirt. Look at this! Nice, cool t-shirts with a scene from Florida. So far, so good on improvising. I was still keeping up the what a great and unexpected adventure attitude. So Ian and Rhea changed into their bathing suits and we went to the back of the hotel to find the pool was opaque green. I told them that, unfortunately, they would not be able to go for a swim. There was a restaurant adjacent to the lobby that advertised a buffet, so we went in to have a meal. And when I picked up a plate, a cockroach ran out from under it and scurried across the floor. I pointed its scurrying little body out to the hostess, who smiled and said, "That's Florida for you." Didn't do anything about him. We headed back to our room. It was really bad. How bad was it? I'm talking threadbare, stained carpeting. That shabby. I was getting nervous, so I moved the dresser in front of the door for an extra measure of security and told the children that the three of us were going to sleep together in the double bed. Pajama party! The walls were paper thin, and there were sounds I didn't want to explain. Finally, my daughter commented, "Mom, that lady must be very religious. She keeps saying, 'Oh God' and 'Jesus Christ.'" I turned out the light and I told them to ignore the banging. They must be exercising. And my son asked, "Why are they exercising so late at night?" Ah, the innocence. We flew back to New York the next day and were picked up by an unhappy husband who had been to the airport the day before to collect our luggage. He didn't have a baggage claim and had to go through a few chains of command until he found someone who took sympathy. I don't know why he was so angry. It took Odysseus 10 years to get home after the Trojan War. I was only a day late. For my part, I was proud of myself. Did Odysseus think he was a failure because he had to battle his way home? Of course not. My children had gone to Disney World. And by the way, so had I. It's easy to lead a trip when everything goes well, but it takes a real trooper to navigate the unexpected. If everything had gone smoothly on the Odyssey, would we have been talking about it 3,000 years later? Disney World was only one on a long checklist of experiences I wanted to make sure my children had. This checklist concept was passed down to me from my Auntie Annie. She was concerned my parents weren't providing me with sufficient cultural exposure. She didn't have her own children, so she took it on as a mission to introduce me to the world of culture. She checked the experiences off one by one. Ballet, opera, Broadway show, classical concert, and dinner in a fine restaurant. Her list was a bit stuffy. I didn't love opera. I thought men in ballet leotards were creepy. I remember seeing Ethel Merman in the Broadway show Annie Get Your Gun about Annie Oakley, and I was disturbed that Ethel Merman was too old for the part. It was about Annie Oakley, who was a sharpshooter in her 20s. And by the time the 1966 revival played, Ethel Merman was in her 50s. So this reminded me of a little story, so I'm going to digress. It's a funny story that about Carrie Fisher, who was, as we know, Princess Leia in Star Wars. She was an unknown when she got the part, and nobody had any idea of what the franchise would become. You might think she got rich on her Princess Leia figurines, but she didn't have any rights to her image. She used to go to Comic-Con festivals to sign autographs to make money in her later years. She told the story in her memoir about a little girl whose mom took her to meet Princess Leia, and the girl began to cry when she saw Carrie Fisher saying, "I want the young one." I wanted the young Annie Oakley. Anyway, I designated myself as the parent in charge of my children's cultural experiences. My list was different. It included botanical gardens, zoos, baseball games, rock concerts, Radio City Music Hall, and a Broadway show. The Broadway show backfired. I thought I was in the running for the Local Herald's Mother of the Year. I took Ian and Raya to see Cats. We went out to lunch on Long Island, and then we left from the train station near my office to go into Manhattan by train. I was brave, but I didn't drive in Manhattan. When we reached Times Square, we stopped in a souvenir store, and I let them each buy something. The show was a long-running hit, and I thought it was worthy of every bit of the acclaim. We arrived back at the train station near my office when it was getting dark. Ian asked if he could go into my office for a while. He was fascinated with the photocopier and office supplies. He loved paper clips, staplers, whiteout, hole punchers. I told him it was too late and it wasn't safe to go into the building at night, and we needed to get home. That's when he said if he knew we weren't going to stop at my office, I mean literally to make photocopies and staple them together, he said he would not have agreed to go to the city. My mind flashed back on lunch, train tickets, souvenirs, show tickets, And that's when I began to hit him over the head with my playbill, and I watched my aspirations for Mother of the Year slipping out of reach. I was watching a show on the world's largest aquarium, and they have caretakers who provide environmental stimulation for the marine life, especially the beluga whales, who are very intelligent and not suited for captivity. This is another aside about a different kind of list that we know about, the bucket list. On my bucket list is to see a whale in the ocean in its natural habitat. Fortunately for humpback whales, they are magnificent creatures that we are not able to capture and keep in captivity. We had tickets for a whale-watching excursion this month leaving from San Francisco, but it was canceled due to the pandemic. Back to environmental stimulation. I thought it was a good description for my role in the family. I had found my niche. I wasn't going to find it baking, sewing, or doing needlepoint. I was neither butcher, baker, nor candlestick maker. I did love to make costumes for my daughter to wear in Rocco's musical theater. She went there from the time she was 5 years old, and Rocco used to give her sheet music that she was too young to read. She later landed leading roles in school productions, and I was able to come up with great costumes. I helped her rehearse lines, shuttling her to and from rehearsals, and reaped the reward of watching her perform. One of the advantages of co-parenting is that each parent brings something different to the table. Nick was great as a sports dad, chatting words of encouragement that were actually correct. I never understood certain sports concepts, like offsides. My daughter would be offsides, and I'd be shouting, "Yay, Raya!" My husband would say, "Back off, back off." Fortunately, they listened to his voice when it came to sports. Nick was at all of the soccer games and followed my son's wrestling career through high school. I wasn't able to help them with computers or technology either the way my husband could. And they became more and more important as my children grew and computers were a greater part of our lives. Here's another passage from the book. I define technology as a process which uses electricity or a battery. After living in the same house for 25 years, I still didn't know which switches control which outdoor lights. I have driven around in my car after the semi-annual change for daylight savings with the clock showing an hour later than it is because I didn't know how to change it. I just waited until we had to advance the clocks ahead an hour in the spring so that the time would be correct again. It was only wrong half of the year. End of passage. So there was a lot of go ask your dad. My husband was Daddy Dolphin in the pool, and I never put my head underwater. I have a friend from the Philippines who told me that she and her friends used to laugh at the American women paddling around in the hotels with their heads out of the water. That was me. My husband always had a signature move of falling headfirst into the pool and flipping over once he hit the water. It became not his signature move last year when he was 72, dropped in like a lead weight, and didn't flip around when he hit the water. He now goes in feet first, like everyone else. Between my husband and me, we were able to provide our children with a well-rounded childhood. If you haven't been able to co-parent, know that your children appreciate and respect you for your role as a single parent. You've had more challenges, and your accomplishments are that much more admirable. My hat goes off to you. I took two kids to Disney by myself, and I'm talking about it 27 years later. If your children don't show they appreciate it yet, rest assured, one day they will. My role in the family for organizing activities followed me through till today. My kids were married adults and visiting on a holiday, and I arranged for us to go to an archery range. It was the perfect amount of competitiveness and fun interaction. I've always been in charge of restaurant reservations, tickets to shows, concerts, baseball games, a.k.a. Vice President of Environmental Stimulation. As I've explained in prior blogs, at the end of my book, there are talking points that correspond to each chapter. The talking points on this chapter are a family outing gone bad, cultural experiences you gave your children, your strength or weakness in teaching your children, or both. Every week, as I've had new insights, I've added on a topic. So this week's add-on is going to be an experience you were able to have through the eyes of your children or grandchildren. So feel free to comment on the blog, on the episode on blogtalkradio.com, or on the event that's posted in 40 Years of PMS on Facebook, and that's 40 spelled out F-O-R-T-Y. I encourage you to form sharing groups and to catch up on past episodes. You can search books, 40 Years of PMS on Blog Talk Radio, or press on the link from the event posted on 40 Years of PMS. My next blog talk, episode 9, will be next week, Sunday, August 9 at 5, about chapter 9 entitled, At the Bottom of God's Purse is Change. It's the halfway point and the turning point of my book. So until then, everyone stay safe and well. This is Notorious LGN signing off for another week.